This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. The land on which I am lucky enough to raise my son always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by Mrs. Kevin's Photos, led by a mother and Melbourne-based fine art film photographer. Creating special photos to keep forever as your visual inheritance, Mrs. Kevin's Photos captures moments through 35mm film, digital and Super 8 video footage so that you can look back and remember how it all felt. To celebrate this partnership, we'll be announcing a giveaway for our Melbourne-based listeners today over on our Instagram at readyornot.pod. Or you can head to mrskevinsphotos.com to book in an emotive, timeless and intimate photography session. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the podcast that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work work. I'm Lou and I'm dedicated to calling myself Lou.
And I am Loz. Lou suits you. I've never even pictured you as a Lucinda, to be honest. Sounds far too formal for me. Yeah, it's because I know you in a different light.
It's much more ready or not. We're very loose around here.
I love it. Okay, I'm going to start things off with a bit of a different take today and go with a funny story and a sad story. I'll kick things off with the sad story so that we can have a lull afterwards. I was reading an article the other day about a woman in Texas whose husband tried to, illegally give her medication.
To induce abortion.
Yeah. So he was having an affair. They had two children together. She got pregnant. And this, I have to say, I can never comprehend. I mean, tell me if you think I'm wrong here. But when or if someone is having an affair, why are you still sleeping with your partner?
That is icky. I feel like in any movie, it's like, wait a sec, we had sex that day. And I'm like, yeah, I would feel icky about that too.
Yeah,
sorry to be rogue, but don't enter me if you're entering someone else.
Exactly. So this guy obviously has gotten his wife pregnant, but is not happy about it. So he's putting things in her drinks to try and induce an abortion.
It literally sounds like a movie. It probably will be a movie in a few years.
Yeah, it's messed up. So this is in the state of Texas in America. He was given 180 days jail time. And what I find incredibly sad about this situation is, A, the laws in America in some states are just wild, in my opinion. But B, if roles had been reversed and this woman had actively gone to get an abortion, she could have ended up with, I think the maximum penalty is life in prison. So for a male to get 180 days, I'm like, what message are we sending here?
So half a year, that basically is 180 days, if my maths is correct, versus her getting up to life. That is a terrible and terrifying double standard. I cannot believe that story.
Yeah, it's wild. On a lighter note, here is a good little laugh for you. So on a Tuesday, my dad looks after Zave while I work, and he also drops Sienna off at kinder and picks her up. So the other day he messaged me, and I actually want to read it to you word for word because it's so funny. For those of my friends that are listening, I mean, I've said it so many times. I've told all my girlfriends because I just think it's hilarious. But I'll tell you the conundrum that it's brought upon myself from Dad being an absolute spud. So this is what he said. Dad laughed. Lady spoke to me near the crossing light. I saw you this morning and before. You are the most incredible dad. Didn't have the heart to tell her, Pa, not Dad. How nice, though. Is he for real?
I love that he said he didn't have the heart to tell her. He just absolutely loved the confidence boost it gave him and didn't want to tell her.
Exactly. But also, I'm like, how awkward for me. Like, Sienna's just started kinder a couple of weeks ago. I've been to a couple of drop-offs and pickups, but Ryan, I think, has done maybe one or two, just as luck would have it. So I guarantee you, half of these kinder mums that I don't know that I've never met would be thinking that my dad is my husband. I'm like, oh, yuck. Like, where do we even go from there? It's so gross.
I love that. Did you say it was the lollipop lady, sorry?
Near the crossing line, yeah.
The lady, that lollipop lady is hopefully spreading some rumors left, right, and center. Have you seen her and her husband? Oh,
it's just embarrassing. I'm like, Dad, pull yourself together, man.
Oh, I love that. He absolutely loved that. Can you just picture? He would have thought that was the best thing to ever happen to him.
Exactly.
Well done, Jezza, and sorry about that to you, Lozzie. Let's get into it. Today, the increasing importance of a best friend at work. The Skim State of Women report for 2024 comes out in a few weeks. So before it does, we're revisiting some of 2023's findings. And lastly, a really, really popular poll on the Ready or Not Instagram. What happens when the partner returns to work? Take it away, my friend.
The increasing importance of a best friend at work. I don't know about you, Lou, but I've always kind of had a work bestie. I feel like naturally it just kind of happens, and usually it's within your team. Have you had the same experience?
I've been very lucky. I've had two at one workplace where I worked for ages. Then I freelanced and contracted. So that sort of period doesn't really equate to having a work best friend. And then when I worked at Cricket Australia for 3 years, I had three really close friends that I'm still in a WhatsApp group with today.
Yeah. So you kind of find your clique at work. What they're saying in this article is that work friends provide essential social and emotional support, and having a best friend at work now ties more strongly to key business outcomes. Recent Gallup data. Jeepers.
Oh my God. Hello, you Texan.
Recent Gallup data shows that having a best friend at work has become more important since the start of the pandemic, even considering the dramatic increase in remote and hybrid work. For instance, an employee can ask their best friend at work dumb, in inverted commas, questions about changes on how to get things done without fear of embarrassment. And when workloads are heavy, your best friend at work is someone you feel accountable to, someone you don't want to let down. So what they're actually seeing in this data is that a lot of best friends, as I said before, tend to be within teams. And usually in a team, you're kind of working towards a similar goal. So it's kind of a bonus and a negative. So as a result, naturally, you'll want to go the extra mile for them on a project. So it works towards business outcomes because you're probably like, oh, I'd love to call in sick today, but I know that this person needs my help, or far out, I don't want to do these extra slides, but I'll do it because I really like that person.
Or it's like Turkish Thursday and I can't let them go get a gozleme without me.
Yeah. That'd be rude. Also, yeah. Also a great point. The research also found that, on the other hand, an employee without a best friend at work became that much more isolated working from home. And because they lack collaboration and a sense of responsibility to a best friend at work, their performance may have dipped too. The data indicates that having a best friend at work is strongly linked to business outcomes, as we touched on just before, including profitability, safety, inventory control, and retention. I have found so many times when I'm having a shit day, even just having a person there to bounce off and be like, oh, you know what, Loz, it's going to get better tomorrow. She was just being a mole in that meeting, or don't worry about him, he interrupted you, whatever it might be. Whereas if I didn't have that conversation, or if I didn't have that relationship, I feel that I would go home, sit on it, become even more frustrated. And if that situation kept happening, I'd probably leave.
And it's different coming home to your partner or to a friend who doesn't work with you at the office.
Yeah.
And telling them your problem, because they don't understand it in the specific context of your industry and where you work. It's a really interesting one. Retention is a big one for me that I've never thought of. For example, when I decided to freelance instead of going back to Cricket Australia, leaving my friends was a big part of my decision of whether I'd want to stay or not. So retention's really interesting. If people are happy and feel like they have a network of people, they're much more likely to stay around. The talk of what that meant during COVID is an interesting one too, because even though we weren't seeing our colleagues, I would often have Zoom drinks with my favorite friends from work, and it really gave me a sense of purpose and happiness during that period. It felt so weird slogging away so many hours in your own home, not seeing anyone. And I reckon that really kept me going. An interesting downside to best friends at work, I think, is that, for example, because I worked closely with sponsors in my role at CA, I would then probably ask something of another content producer that perhaps went outside the sort of content they wanted to produce, but I was like, the sponsor really is pushing for this. We need to deliver on it. And they're like, oh, fine, I'll make that video and post it to that social channel to keep you happy. So it is interesting in the ways that it also might make us do things for our friends at work that we don't actually think are in the best interest of the business.
Yes. So if you've got a work bestie, Gallup said, you are more likely to engage customers and internal partners, get more done in less time, support a safe workplace with fewer accidents and reliability concerns. Strange take. I'd never really thought about that. Innovate and share ideas. Obviously, if you're in a safe space And if you're with somebody that you trust, you're more likely to come up with out-of-the-box ideas, I think. Like, you're not as nervous about sharing something.
I definitely agree with that. I was always terrible at brainstorms in really big groups. But whereas if it was me and a few people that I really trusted, I would firstly ask those dumb questions, as they said earlier, which I couldn't agree with more. Secondly, I would have the confidence to say, how about we do this? And as you say, offer out-of-the-box ideas. That's so true.
Yes. But this was a sad stat. Just 2 in 10 employees report actually having a best friend at work.
Oh, so we're the lucky ones.
Well, I wonder sometimes if it's more skewed towards people that are more extroverted. As in, I would definitely say it's not quite obvious, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what's funny about me? We would call me an extrovert, but I think if you saw me in a business setting, you'd be quite surprised.
Really?
I become very shy, very not confident, quite different. It takes me a while to become an extrovert at work.
Okay.
Otherwise, right. I am, as you well know. But in the workspace, I'm not. I'm like, I don't deserve to be here. I've got imposter syndrome.
Okay. All right. Well, I haven't seen that yet, but I'm sure stay I tuned. Will at some point. Yeah. What struck me as unusual about these stats is while I think personally, I think it's great to have somebody that you trust and can rely on. And I know particularly over COVID, when I was having a bad day or if I had a really shit meeting, I would actually just ping someone and say, hey, do you have a minute? Would you mind having a Zoom call? And then I just unload. That poor person was just sitting there in silence. Then I found a lot better. But I think the thing that can be really difficult is what happens when that friendship turns toxic or when it becomes too close. So the risk that you run of having a work bestie, it says in this article, is when you blur boundaries and your work bestie becomes a personal bestie. So then what happens, particularly in a case if that's your manager? So when you're coming to like salary, I'd find it very difficult to negotiate pay with someone that I knew. Whereas if it's someone I don't know, I'm like, oh, I'll just ask what I want and give it a crack. If they say no, I'm like, oh.
I agree. So maybe it would stump your progress in some ways. For some people, it would mean it fosters their growth really well. But in other instances, it would probably see an awkward relationship turn into less growth.
Yeah. And I would also say I have this rule at workplaces that I would not add anyone on social media until after I'd left. And the reason behind that, and I know this is a contentious topic. A lot of people are like, oh, come on, like, get a load of yourself. But the reason behind that is I, at work, like my work best friends or my work friends, I think would see a side of me that's 80% authentic. So 80% of who I am. But in that 20%, I do reserve for my closest friends. I would prefer not to have like a nervous breakdown about how much washing and shit I have in my house in front of a colleague. Because for me, in some weird way, it is colleague first, friend second in a workplace. Are you the same or is this more so me?
I know exactly what you mean. There are things I remember, particularly pre-kids, I did have a few people from CA on social media, but probably not my managers per se, just more my equals, my peers. And I did think to myself when my manager added me, I know that you know that I go out and drink, but do I really want you to see footage of me at a gig on a Saturday night?
Yep.
Not that I post content related that much to getting absolutely loose on a Saturday night, but if my friend was doing something really funny and I was 25 and I posted that on my social media, would I want my manager to see that even if we were friendly? I don't think I would.
Yeah.
I agree with that one. You don't want them on social media until after you've finished working together. I think that's a really good hot tip, Lozzie. Another way that a close friendship at work can turn toxic happened to me. We all got our salary raises and I didn't get as big of a raise, which we've spoken about before, interestingly, about talking about money with your colleagues. I didn't get the same percentage point raise that these two did.
Yeah.
There were sort of fair enough reasons. They both had to go into proper bubbles for work during COVID and they had to put a lot of on the line for their jobs. But I remember thinking, shit, this is probably a downside of us being so close is that I asked you and I've maybe put you in an awkward position now because then I realized that I didn't get the same percentage raise that they did.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe I was on more money than them. So you never know. But that is another way that it can turn toxic or go south for you.
Yeah. So the conclusion of this article says a couple of things that I couldn't agree with more. It says it's great to have a work bestie. Go for it. It's better for your own mental health. It's better for the business's profit, all those kind of things. But it does say, watch how much you share in the workplace. Set boundaries with team members who work for you and with you. Be realistic about the workplace friendship dynamic and speak respectfully about management at all times. And I will give you a personal example of when speaking negatively can backfire. This happened to me. In one of my roles, I'd had a really shit week, a really hard week, and I confided in a workplace friend and said, this is fucked. I'm hating this. Like, I want to leave. I've had enough. Like, this is such bullshit. Like, I'm not valued. I don't feel like my opinion, or I don't feel like all this work that I'm doing is amounting to anything.
Yeah.
There was some other stuff that was going on in the background that was probably attributing to why I was feeling like that too. Like, it wasn't solely work. There's sometimes when I'm just at the end of my limit, it's like the straw that broke the camel's back, and I just need to be like, fuck this. Like, this is such bullshit. Sorry. My exact words were something along the lines of, I'm over this. If this doesn't improve, I'm out of here. Like, this is not fair.
And is this to a peer or a manager?
This was to a peer. What had happened with this peer is this peer had told my manager.
Is this person meant to be your work bestie?
Not my work. I would say, like, I had a couple of different friends. And I don't think it was done. I don't think it was done maliciously, like with any negative, nasty intent. But this became a massive problem for me because then my manager said, so I heard you want to quit.
Oh my God.
It was an incredibly awkward conversation. And in that moment, it's not as if I wanted to quit. I just wanted to feel heard and valued. And that's what I wasn't getting. So as a flippant remark, I had said, if this doesn't improve, like, I'm out of here. This is bullshit. But I hadn't actually meant, I'm handing in my notice.
Yes.
I'm leaving the team high and dry, taking all my sick leave, and you're on your own. Never. Like, I would say in every job I've ever had, I've always left with a shitload of sick leave because morally I'd feel bad doing that. But in hindsight, I also think, far out, I should have taken a couple of days just to actually recoup so that I didn't have an outburst like that. I should have taken a mental health day. So yeah, just be warned, because sometimes you just need to remember the space that you're in. I know that that person never meant any bad intent, but the repercussions for me from a career perspective were very difficult to navigate.
So firstly, how did you handle that conversation with your manager? And secondly, what do you think your peer was trying to get out of telling your manager that?
In my organization, at the time, there was a lot of change happening. So there was a lot of questions from management naturally going around, how are you feeling? How are you going? Are you okay? Which is the right thing for management to do. So my assumption is that that question would have been asked to this person. And this person may have insinuated that she was a bit down, but also other team members were down.
Yes. Interesting. So you think she was almost going into bat for you, but it wasn't her place to do it.
I just think it was a comment that was made
without thought.
Without thought, yeah. More so to be like, everyone's unhappy. Yes. We're all in the same boat.
I have a hot tip on that. You never, ever do the everyone thing. If you are, for example, complaining about something that a friend's done, a family member's done, a workplace colleague has done, you never go, and everyone thinks this too. I reckon it's the most toxic thing to do.
Yeah, it's awful. But in terms of what I did to approach it with my manager, I just had to be honest. There was nothing else I could do about it. I had to say, I didn't actually mean that I was going to resign, hand in my resignation, leave you high and dry, put up my hands and say I'm out of here. I think my feelings at the time were that I felt undervalued. I felt really overwhelmed, and that I expressed that to someone that I thought was a trusted friend at work that I should never have said that to in that context. So that's a lesson and a learning for me. But it should be a lesson for everybody else. Be very careful what you say, particularly in a tumultuous time in business, because if somebody else is unhappy and you're speaking to them, the all of us are in it together mentality can come into effect, and it may not necessarily position you in the best light in front of your management team. The Skim State of Women report for 2024 comes out in a few weeks, and I thought it might be a good idea to revisit some of the 2023 findings. So we'll obviously touch on it in a future episode, but I reread the report mainly because, you know, just bloody love a report. Love a bit of reading.
You love a bit of a stat.
I do. The report itself looks into the realities of millennial women in the US today. Sometimes it frustrates me that all of these reports are US-based.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I wonder if Australia is that different from the US. Probably. Probably we are.
It's interesting. We always say that it's likely that this will correlate with us, but it actually isn't, is it, really? The British ones, perhaps, more similar. The US, I'm not so sure. I feel like we are more aligned to British people. Do you think that's a fair assumption? Based off no data.
I love conversations like this. From a policy perspective, maybe.
Yes.
Then I recently went to London and...
Oh, you should be able to tell us everything about it.
And I would say from a personality perspective, maybe not. Maybe we're more in line with the US.
Oh, were your jokes not landing, sweetheart?
I don't know. No, the British are just so polite, like unbelievably polite, you know? But then the Americans maybe are swayed the other way a bit more. I'm not sure. You know what? You're always going to be biased to your own nationality. The report touches on career and workplace, household roles, mental health, financial wellness, which I'd love to get into actually on a different episode, mental note to myself, parenting, politics, and more. Lou, you always stumble me with stats. You're always like, guess the stat. And you know, sometimes I'm good, sometimes I'm bad. You don't say it like that.
I love that.
I'm having a real day.
Yeah, no, I feel like your inner competitive nature was coming out just then. Like, fuck you, because I sometimes get them wrong.
But guess the stat. What percentage of women agreed with this statement, do you think, I am always adjusting my life to accommodate others?
Oh, that actually makes me sad, that statement.
I know.
I'm going to say 57%.
Bip, bill, wrong. God, freaking love it when you're in the hot seat.
I'm going to start bam, bam, when you're, I love this.
74%, which is pretty freaking
sad. Wow, three-quartered.
Yeah, it's a lot. Next one, what percentage of women do you think feel like it's their job to worry about and think through all potential scenarios if something bad happens?
Oh, freaking 90%.
Oh, not as doom and gloom as that. 71%, which is still really high. This last one, I actually won't get you to guess because it's a strong stat. 86% of women agree with this statement. Women contribute more to society than they get back.
Couldn't agree more. I will give 100% agreeance on that one.
I know. And then the last one, what percentage of women do you think are largely responsible for the unpaid labor and mental load at home?
I'm just going to go with that earlier percentage of 74% and say that's probably in line with this.
Oh, shivers. You were close, sweetie. 76.
Yes, no bow-bowing me anymore.
It feels good, doesn't it, when you get it right? Like you genuinely.
It feels good when you get it right, but I love that we're celebrating this stat right now.
Yeah, it's sick.
The stat's
sick.
Terrible.
I know, it's but we're like, terrible.
That is, so over 3/4 of women are largely responsible for the unpaid labor and mental load of the home.
Yeah.
It will be very interesting to see what 2024 brings.
What are your thoughts on these stats? Any surprises? Anything that you think will change? Do you think it'll increase, decrease? What's your vibe?
Oh, maybe I'm a bit optimistic, but I feel like they'll all come down slightly. Probably not as much as I would hope they would, but I would say they all would go down slightly.
I'm actually going to be a bit cynical here. I am going to say I think they're going to remain somewhat the same because I don't think enough policy change has happened for it to significantly decrease.
Also, we're seeing some really scary backwards moments occurring in the US when it comes to gender roles in the house and this tradwife movement. So I'm actually agreeing with you.
Yeah, okay.
I want to see it reduce, but I think you're right. I don't reckon we're going to see much of a change, particularly in the US, because things are backward there.
Well, I did want to talk about this tradwife thing. Okay, this is a bit controversial, but I do secretly find those videos quite therapeutic to watch. How messed up is that?
That is so messed up, as in The ones about like you get up before your husband and make yourself look nice. You find that therapeutic to watch?
No, the ones about them like kneading bread and then making the cheese toasty that takes fucking 6 hours. If one of my kids said something like that to me, like I'd like a cheese toasty, I said, oh, darling, just park yourself and watch Bluey for 8 hours. Go for a jog around the block, do whatever. Mummy's just going to make your bread from scratch. Sienna would be like, the fuck, bitch, I'm raiding the pantry. I'm done.
Yeah. Moment's over. I don't even want a cheese toasty.
She'd probably have one bite and be like, yuck, it's disgusting. Yeah. Like,
that bread is terrible. I prefer it from Woolies.
I am one of those people that's fueling it because I'm watching it because when I watch them make it, it's so nice. Like,
I think some of those more homemaker parts to it are okay. Like the idea that you want to make things from scratch is fine. It's the videos that talk more about that you should literally submit to your husband. Like some of the videos go that far. And the ones that talk about that they make themselves look beautiful before their husband wakes up and also freshen up before their husband gets home from work. They're the problematic videos. So you watching some bread being kneaded, it's okay that you find that therapeutic, but can you please stop fucking watching the videos? Because as you say, you are not helping the cause if you are.
It's not okay. And I was just laughing then because the other day, oh God, this is so sad. I saw this TikTok video of someone putting toothpaste on their pimples. And I know it doesn't work. And yet there I was 3 nights ago. I thought, you know what? Maybe it does work and like they've changed the toothpaste formulation or something. Maybe I'll give it a crack again. And I woke up in the morning and Ryan was like, it's on your face. I was like, oh, toothpaste. He's like, why? I'm like, I don't know. Anyway, we digress.
I'm going to publish today. There's a really funny reel doing the rounds of a dad doing the opposite. And his message is, because I submit to my wife, I do this. And before she gets home from work, I'm going to share it on our Instagram page today because it's really funny.
Okay, good. All right. So what are people wanting from this previous report? This was the most insightful piece. Women are saying to companies and brands, get real by being candid and offering practical, functional support. So it's not good enough now to be like, go women. Yeah, like you can do it. What's actionable? I need like a checklist. You need to be providing something that's actually going to help me shift the needle. Women are also saying they would like brands and organizations to double down on long-term commitments. So 79% of women say that they want brands to make long-term commitments to advancing women's rights and equity. And they also want brands and organizations to support the wave by putting a spotlight on women's issues and female-owned businesses. All of those things I think will remain the same. I don't think the needle has shifted greatly enough for it not to be an issue in 2024. Where I do think brands like Bonds are doing a great job is with their period campaigns, like with their female in sport campaigns. I think those are progressive enough, maybe not to shift the needle, but to put a spotlight on what actually takes place for women instead of like romanticizing it. That I think is very clever.
Equally with tennis players like Naomi Osaka talking a lot about what it is to be a mother and a woman in sport.
Yeah.
So hopefully these things do, as you say, you corporate jargoner, you. Can you stop saying shift the needle? That's my request to you.
Oh, far out. How many times have I said it?
We're gonna put you on the ick list. We're going to put you on the corporate ick list for that.
No.
But we'll have to revisit this in a few weeks and hopefully we see more than we've predicted because our predictions are pretty grim.
Pretty grim.
So it dawned on me recently that I've never really asked our followers and listeners about what happens when their partner goes back to work. And this was a really hotly contributed to topic. So we'll start with a few percentage guesses and then we'll move into some answers to questions. It was hard to narrow it down, Lozzie, but I have tried to stick to 5 answers per question as per your request because okay. She's good. She's efficient, much more efficient than me, and she knows how to operate this sort of shit. So, Lozzie, my first question to you, how much parental leave did your partner take? And I'm not asking your partner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking you what you thought the poll has said. So the first option is 0 to 1 week. Second option is 1 to 2 weeks. Third option, 2 to 4 weeks. Fourth option, 4 weeks plus. What do you think is the most common?
1 to 2, B.
So yes, but equally with 4 weeks. So 37%.
Really?
At 1 to 2 weeks. 36% at 4 weeks, which is quite amazing and perhaps indicates to me that the businesses that are progressing are doing so in a decent way. They're actually making changes that they think line up with what families need rather than just adding one more week, for example.
Yes. Or do you think people are stockpiling their annual leave for that?
We will get into that actually, because some of it, the next question is actually around what of that was parental leave versus other leave.
Okay.
So then 2 to 4 weeks is 21%, and only 7% of partners are taking 0 to 1 weeks, which we love to see. That's a very small amount. Hopefully that's 0 1 day, but of course there are situations financially and otherwise where a secondary caregiver would have to go to work. So that is what it is. So my next question is, was their parental leave paid by their employer? Options are yes, partly, and no. What do you think was the most common?
Partly.
So no is actually the most common, which is a bit of a worry.
Oh, I was tossing up between no and partly. Yeah.
So even with the last question, some people must be taking unpaid leave or getting, as you say, clever by using annual leave, long service leave.
Well, it's not clever. It's sad. It's more just that they're stockpiling it and not taking a break. And then essentially they're using their annual leave to also not take a break, because when you have a new family member join your family.
Yeah, it's not a break.
I can tell you now, it doesn't feel like a holiday.
Yeah. That is so true. So no was 41%, yes was 33%, and partly was 26%. I was a bit surprised by that.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
Next one, did you find your partner's return to work daunting? Options were a little bit or yes in a big way. I was laughing this morning when I looked at this because I realized I didn't do a no option. I just did. Yeah, everyone found it somewhat daunting, I'm sure. And no one, I don't think, responded to me saying no. So people agreed. So what do you think was more common, a little bit or yes in a big way?
For first-time parents, yes in a big way is definitely going to be the predominant answer. And I would say for second-time parents, mainly because I'm relating it back to my own experience, I think not too daunting. But I'm going to go predominantly with the yes.
Okay, so I'm going to say that you got this right with your first train of thought, which was that you're giving a pretty even split, because it was 53% for a little bit and 47% for yes in a big way, which is pretty even. And that doesn't take into account, as you say, what leave we're looking at. Is it the first kid, second kid, the third kid?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that you got that one right. So then I asked what helped you adjust to their return to paid work. There were so many answers with a similar theme. I'll just read out some of them, but there were a million good tips. So I might have to make it into a Substack piece as well. First person said mum came to stay for the first week of his return to work, also having clear times that he would be home to take over. Love that. People who have parents to help are so lucky, and I am one of them, and so are you.
Yeah.
Also, a staggered start to work for us. He went back 2 days a week for 2 weeks before full-time. Nice way to ease into it. Next person said, we made a rule that he couldn't leave for work until I had had a shower. That's a really good one. I've noticed when I have the two kids, I think to myself, shit, I actually should get that shower in before Hayden leaves, because when it was just one, no drama. With two, it's a little bit trickier.
It is harder.
Especially with a toddler that isn't really safe around the newborn. I can't really trust that he won't put food in her mouth, for example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's a really great tip. Next one, working from home transition, meals, help with daycare pickup and drop-offs for Sib. That's been huge for us. Hayden's been great with daycare drop-offs and pickups, but my dad's also taken on a bit of that too, which has been brilliant. Next person, a postpartum doula, childcare for the toddler and a big freezer stash. I do not know what I would have done without raising
without food.
Daycare
yeah.
And without
oh, sorry.
Food.
Sorry, I was like, without food.
Yeah, yeah. But both, and all three actually for me, because my postpartum doula, La, I even pulled out a meal this morning from the freezer that she'd prepared. And I was just thinking to myself, you are the gift that keeps on giving, my friend.
Yep.
Last one here is not sure I ever did. It coincided with mum leaving the state to go back home too. It was rough. I wanted to call that one out too, because for some people, it just is a really rough transition, and you're not alone if that's you. Next question, did your partner take extended parental leave? We'd love to hear more. Someone said had it offered for 3 months but didn't take it, which I'm not going to lie, that hurt my soul a bit for that parent.
Oh, I'd be devastated about.
Someone said 16 weeks paid. I was so relaxed going back to work knowing my husband was with my son. That is brilliant. A lot of people have said similar iterations of that. Someone else said my partner took 2 days per week every week for a year of long service leave. Sad, as you say, that he used his long service leave on that sort of arrangement, but brilliant that it would have helped the mother so much. So there's a catch 22 there.
And he got to spend that time.
Exactly. Yeah. That's valuable time. Another listener said, yes, quit his job. And we both went to Bali for 4 months of our postnatal period.
Oh, excellent. Probably my favorite answer.
Same. Mm. My partner will be the primary caregiver in May, and from September, we will both work part-time. That is living the dream right there. Both of you working part-time. I feel like that's how it should be. Next person, he took 3 weeks in the beginning, then every Friday for 7 months. That's another really beautiful way to do it.
Yeah, that is nice.
Drop down to 4 weeks for a period of time and have that initial few weeks together. Next question, why do you think it's important partners get adequate parental leave? This is an obvious one. We could list off so many answers, but I thought it was interesting to see what others said. First person said bonding, time to spend with little one outside of morning/nighttime routine so that they understand how effing hard it is to look after a baby. I think that's a really important one for relationship stuff.
Yeah.
Without it, the gender roles will never change. My partner having time off meant we are truly co-parenting. I love to hear it. They are as much of a parent, setting equal example of parenting for children. Huge adjustment for them too, which is a really good call out. It's not just an adjustment for mum or primary caregiver. It's an adjustment for that secondary caregiver too. Understanding the full scope of a day at home with a baby and connection with the baby, both incredible points. Again, understanding what your partner, the primary caregiver, is going through in a day, I think is so good for your relationship.
Yeah.
And I love this one perhaps the most. People aren't designed to care for a newborn alone all day.
Yeah, it can feel so isolating. Even tag teaming and having your partner do 5 minutes while you go out for a coffee, you can't do that if they're not there.
Exactly, and it can be a lonely day. As I've probably talked about a lot, Hayden is a chippy whose hours are more flexible too. So my heart really does go out to people whose partners leave at 7 a.m. and get home at 6 p.m. That's a really long day. Two more on this because I loved these as well. Equality in parenting equals each parent afforded the same level of parental leave opportunities and also career opportunities. And lastly, because you never get that time back, which I think is really important. I think mums, and I hate to generalize, but I think they do think about those early years more because those secondary caregivers often just assume that they need to go back to work or that that's their responsibility, but they lose that time with the kids too. So I think that's beautiful. And lastly here, and to balance out shared obligations of the family. So when secondary caregivers do take extended leave, it does often in turn lead to better sharing outcomes within the mental load household, etc. I've got one more poll for you to guess here. How much parental leave should be the norm? So the options that I gave to people are 8 weeks plus, 4 weeks plus, 2 weeks plus, 1 week plus. What do you think the people want?
Oh, everyone wants 8 weeks plus.
Yeah. Amen, sister.
Who on earth was voting for less than that?
Not one single person did, which I'm really glad to see. Even the people that voted 2 weeks plus, I'm like, gee, you are much easier pleased than I am. So 8 weeks plus got 57% of votes. 4 weeks plus got 39% of votes, 2 weeks plus got 4% of votes, and 1 week plus got zero, which we love to see because I couldn't agree more, basically.
I am seeing this odd thing happening recently, and I don't know if it's just me, but I went on LinkedIn the other day. I was just having a little look, what's out there, what's available, what roles are coming up, and I saw a company, who I will not name, that had a video on how great it is to work at their organization, which I think is great for companies to do so that you can get a bit of an insight as to what it looks like. I mean, obviously it's going to look great. They're not going to put out some shit video of everyone.
Sometimes we overwork you, but
looking sad. But I thought it was interesting the key points that they pulled out in terms of employee benefits. And one of those was 6 weeks paid parental leave. And all I could think to myself was that is not...
It's not boasting right level, is it?
No.
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought. And it got me thinking, if this company, who seems quite progressive, and I would say is in that tech space, so naturally associate, well, I do, the two of them as being like tech, progressive.
Yes.
Good culture, fun, pool table, all that kind of crap, you know. If they're pointing out 6 weeks paid, I'm like, are we starting to actually lower the bar for what is good parental?
Because my work offered 12 weeks and it was never even, I didn't even know until I was considering pregnancy. So they never really showed that off. And I'd say that's more at the level where you can start to boast about it. 12 weeks as a minimum is perhaps where you can get bragging rights, anything about that.
But I don't even think you can brag about that anymore because you're looking at players that are offering 6 months paid.
Yes.
Parental leave to both primary and secondary caregiver.
Yeah, agree.
So I'm like, unless you're up there, you can't be boasting about 6 weeks. I'm sorry, because it looks bad.
That's a really good point.
Maybe this is just me, and maybe this is me being a bit nitpicky. I am starting to wonder if we're progressing forward or if we're stagnating a bit or if we're actually reducing the bar, because there's other things that we've spoken about, like returning back to the office, mandating office days. So I'm starting to see a couple of these things coming about, like 6 weeks paid parental leave, 10 weeks paid parental leave. I'm not saying it's bad. And I will also say this is a large organization. So this isn't someone with less than 10 employees or less than 100 employees that maybe doesn't earn enough profit or is all female workplace, whatever it may be. But I do think, oh God, it's something to kind of keep my eyes on, because if trends are going backwards, this ain't looking good for women.
Yeah, if you're bragging about that, what is actually out there?
Yeah.
So the next question, and I do have more than five answers here, Lozzie, because it's a juicy one, and I think you'll be okay with it. Greatest relationship challenges when the partner did return to work.
Oh, tell me.
When I say that, firstly, what is the biggest thing that comes up for you? What's your answer?
Maintaining the house, like cleaning, laundry, folding, washing, scrubbing, all that kind of shit. Yeah.
Less time at home, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a great one. Okay. I'm going to list these out because there's quite a few. Expectations, managing housework, as you say. Who is more tired? Love that one.
I hate that. Who is more tired? If Ryan asked me, if Ryan said to me, oh, I'm so tired, I'd be like, from what?
Yeah.
What are you tired from?
From tapping your keyboard a little bit, sweetie.
From getting a takeaway sandwich. I'm freaking eating saladas over here, mate. Like,
yeah, the nutrition that I'm getting compared to you is terrible.
Yeah.
Someone else said wanting to hand baby over as soon as he is home, but husband is cooked from work. Sharing household duties on top of parenting. Loneliness. That one got me right in the heart because I feel for you, sis. Resentment. Juggle sharing the routine. Household jobs. Who needs more sleep? Love this one, Lozzie, based on your sort of theme of what you were talking about the saladas. They got to leave, get a coffee and poo in peace.
Oh, yeah.
Those things should not go underrated. They're very important things. Living in two different worlds. I think that's a really interesting one.
I was just going to say on the poo in peace thing, I had the worst day the other day. Everyone was home. I was dying to go to the toilet. And I'm not joking you. Sienna opened the door, was having a full-on conversation with me. Zave was like pulling out the toilet paper and the door was wide open and Ryan walked past. He's like, geez, doll, close the door. I'm like, close the door?
How? Could you close the door for me?
Like, it's 5 meters away from me. Like, what do you want me to do? This isn't my ideal situation.
Oh.
I was like, this is a parenting low.
No, that's a big no-y. Someone else said feeling validated, feeling self-worth in unpaid contribution. I think that's a huge one. Them being tired, pardon, haha. I had to add that one in because I love it. Feeling envious of their career progression, another big one. I felt so alone and left to flail in a new life and body. I resented him. This is despite him cooking, cleaning, etc. I missed my old life and hated that he still had his. Absolutely understand that one. So there's some of the biggest relationship challenges that are coming up. Lastly, the good stuff. When I was narrowing this down to what I was going to share with you, I actually got a little bit emotional about this because I just thought, I love mums and I love primary caregivers. So I said, now let's look at the good stuff. Celebrating any small wins you remember, like getting two kids in the car for the first time. What surprised you about yourself when navigating parenting solo? Here's a few of my favorites. Establishing routine, having days that felt accomplished for us, baby and I, that is. Creating little mini challenges for myself to achieve in the day, longer drives, cafe with babe, etc. I survived with hub on military posting for months, sometimes no contact. I survived. That one actually is the one that chokes me up a bit because I feel really proud of that person and that's incredible. And I love the emphasis on I survived. I didn't have to thrive. I just got through it because that's huge. Walking to the shops alone with Bub in the carrier, mad dog with a cool Sunday's face.
Mad dog.
I love that. You are a mad dog.
You do feel like a boss when you do that.
You actually do.
It.
The walks to the park with one strapped to my chest and one in the pram. Seemed like a superhero. I did this the other day and I concur, felt like a superhero. I became confident on my own with time. I'm very proud of that. And so you should be. And lastly, getting them to the museum on time and breastfeeding baby while toddler running around. Mums are just the best. I love you all. Well done. There's a million other examples here, but there's a few. Lozzie, we're back on our time limit here. We're about to get kicked out in 8 minutes, which is plenty of time for us to give two brilliant tips. Hit us with yours.
My tip is a gentle nudge that Slack or Teams or whatever you're using as like your corporate messaging tool at your organization, they are company property. So be very mindful. I've said this to so many people. I'm often met with surprise, like, oh, as if they're going to bother going through my Slack, or you would be surprised.
Yeah.
If there is a need to do it, if any claims come up, or if someone's saying that,
or if you're threatening to leave your job to your peer and then they tell your manager.
Look, luckily I have never done that, but please be mindful that whatever you put on a corporate messaging service is accessible to your business. If you need to debrief, decompress, get stuff off your chest, do it via a conversation.
Yes, or WhatsApp or something.
Whatever. I wouldn't even encourage WhatsApp. I think it can be so toxic to have little WhatsApp conversations going on outside your workplace. Pick up the phone, have a conversation, but do not, whatever you're going to say, do not put it in Slack or Teams.
I feel like somewhere where I worked, something like this came up and we were all worried. I knew I'd said nothing bad, but everyone was nitpicking every little thing they'd ever said about a staffer. And it's just a good thing to not do. Just never put yourself
in
that position.
And also, you can never tell tone on message. Like, even if you're saying the nicest thing ever, hope you had a great day today, someone could read that and be like, oh, Lou was actually really rude to me this morning and I feel like she's being sarcastic. As in, I'm not saying go to the extent of don't say that. But what I am saying is,
don't even tell people to have a nice day.
If you feel like something is on the cusp,
don't do it.
Do not put it in Slack or Teams. Don't do
it. We had a joke in our content team at CA that was just never tweet. And it was sort of along those lines. It just meant if you think you shouldn't tweet, don't tweet. So just apply that to every type of comms within the workplace.
Yeah.
My tip is more of a reminder, and I'm not there yet. I'm a year off it, but I thought it was worthy of reminding to the parents that are, and that's that kinder registrations for next year have officially opened. So you have some time, and I don't think it's a first come, first serve basis. I think anyone that puts in their preferences has an even go at getting them, but they are now open. I believe they close end of July. I will put a link in the show notes. And if you feel like being on the more organized side of things, I hate that I'm telling a bunch of mums, but unfortunately the way society is still running, they're the ones that are likely to be doing it. I hope that changes. Or maybe give your partner a nudge. And I'm sorry that you still have to carry the mental load of that, but give them a nudge and get them to do everything else. So there's my tip.
Great tip, actually, Lou. That is a really bloody good one. As always, if you have loved listening to today's episode, please leave us a review and follow us on ReadyOrNot.pod. Chat to you next week.